It's Twin Bills, the Red Sox podcast from the sports department of the Providence Journal, featuring Red Sox beat writer Bill Koch, along with sports editor Bill Corey. Now, Twin Bills.
Hello and welcome to the 4th of July Eve version of the Twin Bills Red Sox podcast. This is Bill Corey. With me is Bill Koch in downtown Providence. Bill, This weather reminds me of 4th of July as when I was a kid. Just hot, hazy, humid. You can't wait to jump in a pool or go to the beach. And we were recording this on the Wednesday afternoon before the holiday. And if my weather app is correct, tomorrow is going to be more of the same.
Yeah, this is a labor of love for us folks. We are sitting in a studio, an air-conditioned studio, but a studio right. Nonetheless.
We're toughing it out.
Right. Bill Corey could be at his Westport estate on his boat, right. Perhaps having an adult beverage or two with his lovely wife and two daughters. But instead, he is here as my
don't tell my don't tell my daughters and my wife that I'm here.
I won't. But I think they'll know now if they are podcast listeners. I don't know if
At least one of them is. Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But we are in here working away because, as we know, with the Red Sox, the news never seems to stop.
No, absolutely not. So let's start with the breaking news, so to speak, today. And that's got to do with some All-Star news. Bill, why don't you fill us in?
Yeah, a couple changes here regarding the Red Sox. Some injury scratches out of the All-Star game have allowed Xander Bogaerts to make the team. He's going to replace Tommy La Stella, I believe, the Angels infielder. And also Hunter Pence, the starting designated hitter, isn't going to be able to make the game. So that's going to allow J.D. Martinez, who is already on the team, to serve as the starting designated hitter for the American League. So two good developments for the Red Sox. As I've said previously on the podcast, I think Bogaerts should have been starting.
I know.
Never mind missing the game entirely. Yeah. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I also thought that Martinez had a pretty good case to start as the designated hitter. So justice for Bogaerts, certainly. And I think something that's relatively deserved for Martinez as well.
Yeah, for sure on the Bogaerts front. I mean, you're looking at his numbers here at the break. His OPS is, 933. He's hitting over 300. He's got 58 RBIs, 16 home runs. Really has just been an anchor in that lineup and consistent all year long and playing a very solid defensive shortstop. And yeah, I agree. I didn't get it. I didn't get why he wasn't on the team before, but at least they made it right and he's on the team. He's not starting, but still he deserves to be in Cleveland and he will be. And yeah, J.D. Martinez also having an all-star caliber year. So two good developments for the Red Sox.
It's a combination of things, Bill. And people look and they say, well, the fan voting doesn't matter about who starts. Well, if you elect the wrong starters, it does, because all of a sudden you might have someone who's deserving,
right,
who gets squeezed into the reserves. You add on the fact that every team must be represented, so you're going to have some guys there who are undeserving already.
Yeah.
And you end up with players like Bogaerts, who should be not only starting, but at the very least should be on the team.
Sure.
They get squeezed out. And it's just a sort of collateral damage that he was a part of. You could say Rafael Devers the same thing. You could certainly make a good case for him to be on the bench at the very least for the American League.
Yeah.
And barring any more injury concerns that come out later this week, he's going to be at home watching the game in Cleveland.
Yeah, I know. And that's a shame, too, because he, too, is having a great season and had a great game last night up in Toronto. Drove in, I believe, 6 runs.
Correct.
Hitting the ball all over the ballpark, going opposite field for a home run, really coming into his own. Bill, the last time we sat down and to do this podcast, the Red Sox were about to go to London, and we were lamenting the woes, the continuing woes of the bullpen. And they're back from London, so we're going to chat about that. But before we do that, let's talk about the latest news in terms of the bullpen, and that was kind of a surprising development, I think.
Yeah.
And that is I guess a couple of days ago now, Tom Caron, I guess, broke the story initially out of Nesson, that Nathan Eovaldi will go to the bullpen, and it sounds like he'll be ready within a week or maybe two. At first I thought, well, you signed him as a starter.
And, you know, I'm not sure if he's on board with it, but in some ways it makes sense because, you know, as a reliever, you don't really need to build up as much stamina or arm strength as you would as a starter. So maybe you're getting him back a little sooner.
Right.
And we know he's got the stuff.
Right.
So I think in the short term anyway, this has the potential to really help that bullpen.
Yeah, there are a couple things to discuss there. Evaldi spoke today in Toronto, actually, and he said, right now I feel really good and I don't think it will take too long. Describes the process to get back to the team as frustrating. But he told them that he was eager to do anything that he could do to help.
Right.
And I think that it reflects not only the very real physical toll of trying to build him up to be a starter, as you noted. But it also reflects the desperation of the Red Sox right now. You know, they're on the outside looking in terms of the wild card race. The division race has vanished up the road. They're 10 games behind the Yankees with 77 to play. So that's going to be a difficult thing to overcome. And if you're Boston, you didn't build this roster to be left out of the post.
No,
you did not.
Absolutely not.
Not considering
not coming off a World Series championship.
Not considering what you're paying, who you're paying. So maybe moving Evaldi to the bullpen maximizes what they have. I think that they're looking to make the best out of imperfect circumstances here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what's going to be left. You're probably going to have four starters, and then you'll use a combination of Steven Wright, Brian Johnson, and Hector Velasquez as an opener and then a follower on that fifth day. And
yeah,
you hope that maybe between those three guys you'll be able to cobble together five or six innings every time the
sure
rotation comes through. In Evaldi's case, you figure he's a guy, even if you use him as a closer, he could go multiple innings.
Yeah.
You know, could certainly go more than three outs, could probably give you six outs if you ask him to. And as we've talked about before, the guys down there in the bullpen are overworked, whether it's Matt Barnes, Brandon Workman, Marcus Walden. Hopefully they get Heath Embry back soon. He started a rehab assignment at Pawtucket earlier this week. But those guys are overworked and hitting the wall, and you've seen the difficulty that they had throughout June. I think they're just looking to bolster that group any way they can. They've moved Darwins and Hernandez to the bullpen in Pawtucket. Stands to reason that he's going to come up at some point. There's been some discussion about Tanner Houck, who's a starter at Portland, a right-hander. He could show up at some point
right
in this bullpen later in the year. But I think they're looking at trying to address the biggest area of need that they have, and they don't really have a perfect solution. This might be the best that they can do.
Well, it'll be interesting to me to see how they use him. Will he be the closer? Will he be the setup guy? Will they name Barnes the closer or Brazier the closer? I mean, I think, as we said last time, they need an arm. You know, they don't necessarily
yes
need a closer, but they need an arm.
Correct.
I'm interested to see if they are going to go with that philosophy, just sort of, you know, it doesn't matter who the closer is. We just know we've got three guys at the back end. Or if they're going to say, listen, Nate, you're the closer. You know, we're going to bring you in the ninth or, you know, with, you know, one or two outs in the eighth and take it the rest of the way. Either way, I think that he's up to that task. I mean, we saw what he could do in the postseason last year.
Right.
And he certainly has the stuff. Again, as I said, the more I thought about it, I thought it made sense. It also kind of indicated that, you know, I don't think the Red Sox are really willing to go out and break the bank these days.
Well, and they're in a difficult position in terms of the collective balance tax, the luxury tax, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
You know, they're in a spot where they're at about $239.6 million. The threshold, the third threshold, is $246 million. It's a threshold that they broke last year.
So they've already broke the first two thresholds and had to pay whatever the PIP penalties are on those, right?
It's a tax on all overages.
Yeah.
So they're paying taxes on $33 million of their payroll.
Hmm.
They'll pay a 20% tax on top or a 30% tax on top.
Wow.
You know, and they're also a repeat violator of this. They did this last year as well. So some of those penalties could spike up to as high as 50% on all overages.
Wow.
You could imagine breaking through the tax by $40 million and paying a 50% tax.
$20 million.
$20 million. Just, you're cutting just a check for nothing. Baseball. you know, just because of your payroll.
Yeah.
The other real cost there is that you lose 10 spots in the draft if you go through that third threshold.
Right. And that's the big thing for them. I mean, it's one thing to say the Red Sox have to pay more. I mean, the Red Sox, the Yankees, you know, the Cubs, maybe there's a few teams that are almost printing money. But now when you're taking away draft picks, that hurts.
You're taking away talent from an area that the Red Sox are weak in.
Yeah.
You know, they feel like a lot of their better prospects are at the lower levels of the minors, whether it be Class A or Double A in Portland. But that's an area that they need to address. And they didn't make their first draft pick this year until 43rd overall. That would have been 33.
Yeah.
But you lost the 10 spots for going over the you know, the last threshold last year. Now, granted, it worked out. You won the World Series.
Yeah.
But that's not something that you can be doing every single year. Can John Henry afford it? Sure. Theoretically, he can. It might cost him a payment or two on his vacation home in Florida or wherever it may be. But it's not necessarily good organizational management to be doing that. You know, and it's certainly not good from a manpower standpoint. If you're going to try and rebuild this depleted farm system, you need all the draft picks, the best draft picks, the highest draft picks that you can get.
Sure.
So that's something that I think that they're responding to, and I think Henry addressed in some comments this week with WEEI.com and Rob Bradford, where he said that, you know, this isn't necessarily going to be a situation where they just spend into infinity. He's going to pull in the reins a little bit here, assess what they have in terms of their talent on the roster, and then make decisions going forward.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I also heard similar comments this week about, you know, are they going to go out and break the bank at the trade deadline? And I think it was either John Henry, it might have been Dombrowski, but the message was, well, this team sort of has to show me a little bit.
Right.
They sort of have to. They've got a lot of talent. They've got essentially the same talent they had last year.
Right.
They shouldn't be, you know, treading water here and scuffling for a second wild card spot. They should be really in the hunt for the division or firmly in place in one of the wild cards. And they're not. They're not that team. So I can see the front office saying, hey, you know, guys, you got to get your act together if you want us to go out and pay these penalties and blow through the luxury tax. And I, you know, it sounds like this Nathan Eovaldi thing is sort of related to that.
Well, I found Henry's comments very interesting from this standpoint. Dave Dombrowski's contract runs through the 2020 season.
Next year.
Yeah. So he has a year and a half left. Theoretically, you, in professional sports and college sports too, you don't necessarily do lame duck years. You either get an extension or you have a parting of the ways. And if you're Henry, you're the owner, you empower Dombrowski to run the baseball side of it. Dombrowski has delivered you a championship, yes, but he's also spent lavishly to do so.
Yeah.
You know, in Henry's case, if he's looking at it and thinking, I'm tired of Dave spending my money, if it's only going to return one championship and I'm going to pay the luxury tax however many years in a row, is this really worth it?
Right.
Should I bring in somebody else? So I also interpreted Henry's comments maybe a little bit of a shot, I wouldn't say across the bow, but maybe a few yards out in front of the bow at Dombrowski, sort of saying, look, this offseason you had a chance to make some moves. You didn't necessarily make them.
Right.
You had a chance maybe to clear some salary. You didn't necessarily do it. You spent on Eovaldi. You spent on Steve Pierce. You've got a lot of guys who are going to come off the books within the next 2 or 3 years, whether it be Mookie Betts or Jackie Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are going to be some big decisions to make. Are you going to be the person that I allow to make them? So I thought Henry's comments in that context were very interesting in the long-term picture.
Well, it's absolutely true that this is now Dave Dombrowski's team. You know, it, when John Farrell was still there, you know, there was sort of that layer of that buffer zone, so to speak.
Yes.
He could always say, hey, well, this wasn't my guy. You know, this wasn't the... Right, you know, now, you know, what is this? Like his fourth year with the Red Sox, maybe?
He was brought in as a consultant in 2015 when they fired Ben Chiarin.
Okay, so, yeah.
And then he was named the full president of baseball operations, I think that offseason going into 2016.
So 16, 17, 18. So this is, yeah, his fourth season. So, yeah, this is Dave Dombrowski's toy now. This is his manager. You know, he's made the big signings. So I could sort of see where John Henry is saying, hey, you know, it's time that you sink or swim here. And, I mean, truth be told, Bill, this team has been an underperforming, disappointing team.
Oh, this season, no question.
For this entire season. So I don't blame them. I don't blame them for saying, we're just not going to keep going out there and buying more arms. I mean, this team should be better than what it is.
Right.
So speaking of better than what it is, boy, what happened in London, huh?
Ooh.
So, you know, when the Yankees, the first inning, when the Yankees scored all those runs in the first game, I'm thinking, oh, man, it's going to be embarrassing. And then the Red Sox get up and score a bunch of runs. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe the pitching the whole change of schedule and jet lag and everything. Maybe that's affecting the pitching more. But how do you score 21 runs if you're the Red Sox? You score 21 runs over 2 days and lose both games.
Not a good look, is it?
No, it's horrible. And, you know, it wasn't like they were these really nip and tuck close games. I mean, you know, they just got their, you know what's kicked.
Their behinds kicked.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And essentially, as you said earlier, you know, they're pretty much out of the division race now.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sort of the last straw. If they were able to take those two games, come home, they're facing a weak Toronto team, and as we said, going to Detroit. You know, now it's feasible. You see a path forward, as you said, with 10 games back and 70 something left to play. It's nearly impossible, and you really are focusing at this point on the wild card.
Yeah, the difference between 7 and 11 is massive.
Right, right.
You know, with half the season already played, I think I made this point the other night. I was on WPRO with Yanni Caracas, and I said, you look at the Sox right now; they're 45-40. They started 11-17.
Yeah.
So over the last 60 or so games, they've played 11 over 500, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If you sort of build that out over a full season, you're going to be 20, 25 games over. That's a pretty good record.
Right.
But they left themselves such a hill to climb with that poor start. They've been running up that hill.
Well, plus they're not getting any traction. You know, they're getting to 5 games over .500, 6 games over .500, and then they're dropping a couple. And then, you know, it's like they're never really building on that lead.
And that's the nature of sort of chasing your tail the way that they have. You know, they could start 11-17 and play 20 games over the rest of the year, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And their overall record still isn't going to be that great.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be like in that 86-72 range, somewhere in there.
Right, far cry from 108.
Right, it's just not good enough. It's not commensurate with the talent on the roster.
Yeah.
So they've sort of been just chasing and grinding. And that's the word that the players use a lot of the time. It's been a grind.
Yeah.
All season, it's been really difficult. Feels like they're in second gear and they can't get to third and then to fourth.
Yeah.
So you look at what happened in London, and I think the most dispiriting thing, obviously, is Masahiro Tanaka got two outs in the first game. Stephen Tarpley started the second game.
Yeah.
He had a 4-0 lead.
Yeah.
Both of those guys got completely blown out, and the Yankees still won both games,
yeah.
Which, you know, that's probably the most dispiriting thing. Rick Porcello was a complete no-show in his start. And then Eduardo Rodriguez was decent. Built up his pitch count. Stop me if you've heard this before. The bullpen comes in and falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, and it highlighted a few things, and I think Alex Cora was pretty candid afterwards. First, the Yankees were a lot better than they were last year. I don't think anyone can dispute that.
Sure.
That lineup is a machine at this point. You know, and as I've said before, the additions that they've made, whether it be DJ LeMahieu, or a few other guys there, their ability to get the ball in play and constantly put pressure on opposing pitchers, I think that's made a huge difference. They're able to keep the line moving a little better than they have been in recent seasons, where they're a little bit more like a softball lineup.
Right.
It's either a home run or a strikeout. They're able to do a little different. They're able to do some different things. They're a little more versatile offensively. Their pitching staff is what it is. I don't think they have great starters. Luis Severino had another setback this week. It might be another 2 months before he pitches. He might miss the entire season. Their bullpen gave it up last night to the Mets.
Right.
Whether it was Adam Ottavino and Zach Britton, they both got hit around at Citi Field. Britton also got hit around in an outing later last week. So those guys aren't bulletproof. There's a lot made that the Yankees bullpen is the greatest bullpen of all time and that they're just going to shove through October. The nature of bullpen says that there's going to be some inconsistency along the way. But that lineup just does not quit. The collection of the 25 does not quit. They have this healthy lead over the Rays and the Red Sox for a good reason. They've been excellent from the start. And I just think if you're Boston, you need to look around at Texas and at Cleveland and at Tampa. Those are probably your peers now.
Right. The Porcello start really surprised me. I felt good going into that game as a Red Sox fan, thinking, okay, well, if you've got a guy here who's going to keep you in the game, I don't think that the trip over here and the change in schedule is probably going to affect him that much, because he's a veteran and he knows his role and knows how to adapt and deal with these kinds of things. But boy, it I don't know if maybe that missed pop up by Michael Chavis at first base, where there was a mile of foul territory we had to cover, but he didn't make that play. That at that moment, it seemed like that really kind of changed the tenor of the inning. But the Yankees just went on to score a ton of runs. I don't think that would have really made a difference. And to see Porcello, not get out of that inning, I thought was certainly dispiriting. And I didn't have a good feeling for the next game either.
I think you saw in that start why the Red Sox have not extended him or engaged him in contract extension talks. All right, you're talking about a 30-year-old guy who's put a lot of miles on in his career. His first full season, he was a 20-year-old. It was in 2009. Right now, he has a 5.07 ERA, a 1.40 whip, which is just brutal,
right.
Is striking out a batter and a half less per nine innings this year. Porcello is the type of guy who, with his stuff, he needs to be virtually flawless out there. Needs to be hitting spots.
Right.
Needs to be pitching to the edges of the strike zone. Needs guys to chase. He doesn't have the sort of power stuff that Chris Sale does that might play in a longer term. So you're looking at Porcello, and you saw the reason why it seems like they're content to walk away from him at the end of this season. I tweeted out at the time that I think he'd be better served going in the National League in free agency, sort of like Dallas Keuchel just did when he signed with the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe face a weaker lineup that's going to have a pitcher in it, a light-hitting catcher in it, a sort of utility player, whether it be infielder or outfielder, who gets double-switched and starts every fifth day.
Yeah.
Because you saw what happened when he faces the best lineup in the game. There's just no margin for error, and the Yankees brutalized him, knocked him out of the game. He retired one batter and really didn't have a chance in that start.
So interesting to get your take here on the series, just kind of as a whole, not so much just the baseball aspect of it. Kind of interesting. I was interested to see how Mookie Betts met Meghan Markle there. I guess there was there's a connection, family relationship there.
Yeah, distant relatives dating back to, I think, Alabama in the 1860s.
Wow.
Yeah, so many generations removed, but there is a shared relation there.
Right. And I know they interviewed Alex Cora about meeting royalty, and he said, boy, I was nervous.
Yeah, sure.
Didn't want to say the wrong thing.
Sure.
But overall, I thought it was, aside from the fact that the Red Sox lost both games, I thought it was a kind of an enjoyable thing to watch. The fans, the stadium was obviously packed.
Mm-hmm.
They got good weather. I thought it went off essentially without a hitch.
Yeah, no question. It's one of those things that Major League Baseball wants to do to try to grow the game. They played regular season games in Puerto Rico and Mexico. They'll play them in different countries. I'm sure they'll be exploring other venues to go to now. These were the first regular season games played in Europe, and as you mentioned, the attendance being what it was, the fact that the fans stayed through
some
most
brutal
of both
baseball,
games.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about 4.5 hour games both days.
Right.
You know, it was interminable.
Right.
It seemed like.
Well, it's Red Sox Yankees. What do you expect?
Well, that's true,
right?
too. You know, for anyone who watched those playoff games in 03 and 04, you're used to 4.5 hours and, you know, whatever. Those were a little more dramatic
right.
than these. But I thought it was well received. I think, you know, you might have heard some peripheral complaints about you know, the ball not necessarily reacting the way pitchers thought it might.
Right.
And, you know, the stadium construction in terms of the square footage in the outfield and the foul ground, and you know how it didn't really play like a traditional major league park. It was a little gimmicky. But those are things that sort of came out of the Red Sox camp, and those are things that you say when you lose,
yeah, right.
I think. You know, yes, it's a track and field stadium. That's what it was designed for. So it reduces wind and drag, and the ball doesn't curve like you would expect or sink the way it would expect.
Right.
The Yankee pitchers had to throw there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
They got enough of your guys out. You didn't get enough of their guys
right.
out, and that was that. But I think this is one of those things that right now you probably look at it and you say, oh, it was an inconvenience. It was right in the middle of the season. You know, it was – we played bad. We got beat up. You're 10, 15 years from now, and you're retired, and you're a player. You're going to say, you know, we went over to London. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I got to bring my family. We went to this, you know, a couple galas, and, you know, we get to play in front of this full stadium and make history. So it's probably one of those things that you're going to appreciate a little later on in your life, but not necessarily right now.
No, no. Probably appreciate it more if you had won one of the games.
Well, that too. Sure.
Right. So the team is stateside now. Well, actually, I'm wrong. They're not stateside. They're up in Canada.
Correct.
They're in North America anyway.
Right.
And they had a strong outing last night, beating the Blue Jays 10-6. I think it was something like
10-6.
10-6. And another couple of games there before they then go to Detroit. And so we are now in July, Bill, and the trade deadline is coming up at the end of this month. And with the recent word of Nate Eovaldi going to the bullpen, I wonder now, are they going to try and get somebody? Maybe they don't break the bank, but are they going to try and add an arm? Because I listened to Cora had an interview on the radio this afternoon, and you know, he said that this thing with Eovaldi is not necessarily a permanent decision. In other words, he may be a starter in the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks down the road. He may not continue to be in the bullpen. So how does this affect, you think, their trade deadline acquisitions, potential acquisitions anyway?
Well, the real question, obviously, is how do you plan to build him up if you're going to have him pitch in relief and then make him a starter?
Mm.
It's not necessarily enough time or really the opening in the schedule to have him throw 50 or 60 pitches in a side session
yeah.
and then run him out into the bullpen that night. You know, that would require some rest, and you're not necessarily going to have him out there. So I think that's a little dubious. It might be placating the player a little bit. If Aldi spoke to them in the offseason before he signed the contract and said it was his preference to start, it's their preference to have him start.
Sure.
If they wanted to spend $16 million on a closer, they would have just re-signed Greg Kimbrel.
Right.
They weren't
going to
do that.
Yeah.
So I think that they're going to go forward with sort of these four guys, Sale, Price, Rodriguez, Porcello. And then that fifth day is going to be a combination of Stephen Wright, Brian Johnson, Hector Velasquez, whether it be as the opener or as a straight starter, or, you know, Wright follows Velasquez or Johnson, or Velasquez and Johnson follow Wright, whatever it may be. You look at what they have in terms of salary available to not go over the threshold. They're at $239.6 right now. So essentially, if you're going to make a trade and the deadline is July 31st, you'll have played about 100 games by then, 105 games by mm-hmm. then. You're paying a player's salary prorated over the last third of the season. So what you're essentially doing is, if you factor in for a couple September call-ups, you put them on the Major League pay scale. Or anyone else that you'd want to call up right now,
mm-hmm.
you put them on the Major League pay scale. So someone like Trevor Kelly all of a sudden counts for the prorated version of $550,000, whatever the minimum might be. So you're looking at trading for a player who's likely about a $14 or $15 million player.
Because you're only paying him for the last 2 months of the season.
Correct. Right. You're going to pay him $4.5, $5 million prorated over the course of the year. That's going to put you right up to the threshold. So you're going to look at maybe a starting pitcher, a reliever, a position player. You only have about $5 million to work
with. It's not a whole lot, yeah.
So, you know, what sort of caliber of player are you going to get? It's not going to be like, you're not going to be in the market for Max Scherzer, who makes $30 million a year. The Yankees might be.
Yeah.
You're not going to be. The Astros might be. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be. You're out of that. So if you're going to make a move this year, it's going to be more along the lines, I think, of what you did last year. It's going to be a sort of Band-Aid move, like a Steve Pierce or a Nathan Eovaldi.
Which at the time we thought was kind of, you know, underwhelming. I mean, they seemed like they were solid pickups, but they weren't the big splash that I think people were expecting or hoping for anyway.
What I wrote for the Journal, I think it was last week, was Dave Dombrowski zigged while everybody else zagged.
Right.
Everybody else went for relief help.
Yeah.
And Dombrowski added a right-handed bat and a starting pitcher, and everyone sort of looked and said, well, what is he doing?
No, you're right.
The Red Sox need a reliever. What happened here?
Yep.
Those turned out to be master strokes.
Sure.
Pierce was great. Eovaldi was terrific, particularly against the Yankees, and had the biggest heart on the roster in the postseason.
Oh, sure.
I mean, what he sacrificed for them as a free agent. Someone going, you know, in a contract year was extraordinary, considering, you know, modern finance and you know, generally what we think about player attitudes. It was phenomenal what he gave them in October. So you're looking at right now and you're thinking, would you like to add a bullpen piece, a prime bullpen piece, a guy who's a closer? Mm-hmm. Sure, but he can only make a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
Because you've gone over the tax once last year and you've made some other deals, are you willing to further strip down that farm system? Are you going to trade a Bobby Dalbec or, you know, a Brian Matta or a Darwinson Hernandez, somebody like that, to try and get a bullpen piece who has some tenure, like a Kirby Yates, who you'd be able to control for the rest of this year and then maybe 2 or 3 years after that?
Right.
That price goes up the longer you're able to keep that player. So there are difficult decisions here to make, and I think John Henry sort of dictated terms in that interview with Rob Bradford, where he pretty much said, without saying it, we don't really want to go through the tax again.
Right.
If you're going to make a deal, maybe we need to shed a little payroll in a deal. You know, maybe you need to trade off a Rick Porcello to add someone in a different place. Hmm. It's going to be incumbent upon Dombrowski, maybe, I think, to be a little more creative this time around than last year, where it was just, these are our needs, we could spend whatever we want. This time around, I think the circumstances are a little different.
Right, right. You know, in terms of Eovaldi and whether he's going to resume as a starter, and I think that a lot of that will depend on how he does. I mean, if he settles in and really gives that bullpen a boost and some stability, don't change
why
anything.
Move? Right, exactly.
You know, don't change anything. I mean, you were desperate for a bullpen arm, and if you've got one in your own ranks and it works out, keep him there for the rest of the year.
And this isn't without precedent. They did this with David Price in 2017.
Right, it's kind of same kind of thing, although it was a little bit later in the season, I want to say.
It was in September. Yeah. But, you know, they had determined that he didn't have enough time to build up.
Right.
They did this with Curt Schilling after the World Series season in 2004.
That's right, yeah.
He had the ankle surgery, and it was very clear that he wasn't going to be able to be an effective starter every fifth day, so they moved him to the bullpen.
Yeah.
So this isn't without precedent. Red Sox fans have seen this before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. All-Star weekend or All-Star break is coming up next week.
Correct.
And then the Red Sox begin, it's not technically the second half, but what we all like to call the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been on the road quite a bit. And they're going to be home quite a bit, I believe, after the break.
Yes.
So that probably should help them. Although this year, they're not very, you know, they're not that good at home.
It's been bizarre.
It's been strange. But looking ahead, Bill, what do you think the Red Sox realistically can achieve this year?
I think they can be a wild card team.
Okay.
I don't see any reason why not. Mainly because they don't have debilitating injuries. You know, they're not in a situation where someone like Mookie Betts is out, let's say.
Yeah.
There is plenty of talent there. Mm-hmm. As we keep saying, as they keep saying, you're just waiting for it to click. Whether or not it will, I don't know. Maybe we should look at the first 85 games and say to ourselves, they've shown us who they are.
Well, except that these were mostly the same players from last year. They showed us who they were last year, too.
And so that's the illusion and the sort of mental struggle that you have. You sort of can't comprehend how this machine from a season ago is sort of stuck the way that they have been. But I think that's why they're so reluctant to, you know, maybe just declare this a failure or sell or whatever it may be. I also think that, you know, when most people hear the word sellers, they automatically jump into something that's a teardown.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if we're going to be sellers, that means
they're going to blow up the team.
That means they're going to trade Betts and Martinez and whatever else. Yeah. That's a little extreme. You know, if they're going to be sellers, if they come out of the break and they have that stretch against the Rays and the Yankees and they struggle, could they trade Porcello and Mitch Moreland and maybe a couple other periphery pieces? Yeah. Sure, because their contracts are up. Mm-hmm. And they might not be thinking about bringing those guys back anyway.
Yeah.
So you recoup what you can, whether it be in prospects or in a major league reliever who could help you next year or whatever it may be.
Sure.
But I think people automatically just take that next step to, well, they're going to trade some guys, so that means they're going to put bets on the market too. And, you know, and it's like, let's slow down.
Yeah.
Because even if they miss the playoffs this year, you still have a really strong core coming back for 2020.
Sure.
You know, Chris Sale is still under contract. David Price is still under contract. Mookie Betts is still here. If J.D. Martinez doesn't opt out, he's still here.
Bogarts is still here.
Yeah. Devers is still here.
Yeah.
You know, you still have a roster that could have five or six All-Stars on it if they play to their capabilities. So I just keep waiting for that group to show up. And I think regular seasons after you win a championship, I've said this before, I think it's only natural for them to feel like drudgery.
Hmm.
It's like, can we just get to October already and play the real games that matter?
Yeah. Well, you have to get there first.
You have to get there first. You need to embrace that process. And that's the really difficult part of baseball, I think. Maintaining that consistency over 6 months and over 162 games, that's not the fun part.
Right.
The October games are fun. That draws the best out of everybody. But like playing in Detroit this weekend, that's not necessarily anything romantic or celebratory for these guys. But where they are right now, it's something that they need to apply their focus to. And I think they've backed themselves into a corner where they're going to need to focus a lot more over the last 75 games than they would have last season. So I think the rest of the way, yes, I think they can be a wild card team, but it's a really good test of their professionalism and their application. And I think that is going to determine how they do, maybe more so than their physical performance.
Well, every game matters. Every win counts. So hopefully they are sort of focusing on that as well. Bill, we will do this again in a week after the break. I believe the Los Angeles Dodgers are coming to town.
Correct. The World Series rematch.
And a very good Los Angeles Dodgers team, if you look at the standings,
by the way.
So we are looking forward to that. And we'll do it again a week from now.